who I met the other day. Nick, what's his face? Nick. Oh, what's that sound now?
No, it's me doing my nose. It's me doing my nose. Who did you meet?
No, there's like a static. Oh, now it's gone. Nick, Rayberger, what's his name?
Oh, I love Nick Rayberger.
Well,
oh yes, I saw that he went to your show
because he's good friends with Stephen Michael Spencer, who's in the show. Who?
Yeah,
you'd like Stephen a lot. Stephen works like all he works like nonstop.
I love and Nick Rayberger. Listen, it's so funny. I love talented people. I can't stand untalented people. I know it's so mean, but you know, I just really can't. Yeah. Nick is so talented. And we met
he was the best one in that Hamlet in the park.
He was really good in that Hamlet in the park. Yeah, he was. No, he's such a sweet guy, and you know, he can sing his fucking face off.
Believe it.
And he's he's a good actor. No, he's so nice. We sort of served I think we're actually kind of similar in terms of, I give all those compliments. I'm like, he's an amazing actor. He could see his fucking face. We're very similar. No, just in terms of the space that we take up, like as performers. And so like in that Ella thing we were doing, we were sort of.
Oh, he was in that. Oh.
That's where we met. And he was serving the same purpose that I was. We like played a bunch of different characters.
But the racist white guy.
The racist white guys. That's right. Guys. That's right. And I remember he got COVID and had to leave, and then I had to do the racist white guy scene. I had to read both parts.
I remember you telling me that.
It was horrible.
It's like a bunch of white guys like ganging up on somebody, right?
Yes. So and so it was just like me being like saying horrible things.
So it's just you just like saying all these lies.
All these horrible
that's so
things.
Funny.
It was horrible for weeks.
But he was so nice because he knows. Yeah, he knows Steven. I guess really well. And Steven is somebody who knows like fucking everybody. It's crazy. But I told him, I was like, I was like, hey, you're Nick, right? Do you know Joshua Morgan? He was like, oh yeah, of course I know Joshua. And I was like, well, and you know Kathy Hoyt, because I heard that, like, do all this.
Oh, yeah.
I remember you telling me that he walked her home. Kathy's a very good friend of ours. And,
yep. We love Kathy.
The podcast. And so, yeah, he was like, oh, of course. But he was really, really nice.
Let's have Nick on.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I'm gonna ask him to do it. I just think he's so cool, and I just think he's really sweet
and really talented
and interesting guy. So yeah, we'll have
Nick on. We'll have Nick Rayberger on.
Wait, yeah. you just were saying something. Oh wait, y'all, before we forget, Labad just opened his show. The Assassination of Julius Caesar as told by William Shakespeare and George Bernard Shaw, correct?
Did I get that's that correct? The name of the show, yeah.
At Bedlam. I've heard nothing but good things from him about himself. And so please I have been investigating, and I know that people are thinking it's super interesting, and that Labad in particular is giving a specifically dynamic performance, although no shock there. I've taught her everything she's known. So make sure you go to see it. You run until how long?
April 7th.
April 7th. Oh, that's when Virginia Woolf closes too.
There you go.
We'll see. Okay, so ladies, girlies, hello friends. Welcome to Creative Risk, where we talk about art, entrepreneurialism, and everything in between. I hope you see Mike. I'm holding the blue light with my thumb because the theme will continue. I was just thinking about that, but I have some tape somewhere, but I can't find it.
That's because it bothers you, or you're saying for the actual.
Yes,
camera.
It just bothers me. I hate this. You know, every time I talk about
this. Well, that's because right now I know you have your own face pinned. You're one of those sick people who has like your face pinned on Zoom.
What are you talking about?
Call.
Wait, you don't. I have you and me side by side. So that I can see, you know, if a crazy man comes in behind me and like, you know, mid recording, I'm not just babbling away.
Wow,
and then
there
he
you go.
Beats and rapes
that's,
me.
That's
you know?
That's a very man fear.
That's a man fear? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's like I never got this. I've never been like men who don't sit with their backs to the door or whatever because like somebody could.
Oh,
come
I don't
in.
Do that.
You don't sit with your back to the door.
Nope.
I don't know.
Gotta watch it.
I guess I'm kind of reckless. I'm like, yeah, I guess somebody wants to come in.
You are
in.
Reckless, but like in a fun way, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
But like that's like your whole thing. I'm reckless, but bless you. You're reckless in a not unconscious way, and I'm reckless in a conscious way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, let me wreck shit. Okay, so folks, listen, we're going to get into an interesting topic today. Mike had this idea, and I thought, yeah, this is a good one. Was acting conservatory worth it? Was our training, where's those 4 years, those intensive 4 years where crazy, crazy shit happened, right? You know, I mean, we've talked about this a lot. Was it worth it? Was it worth the what some people refer to as abuse, which I wasn't thinking we should talk about today, but that's an interesting side topic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just briefly,
yeah,
you know.
Probably.
Was it considered abuse slash were we prepared? Were we prepared
when
for
somebody
for
stuck
what
a whole bowling pin up my ass during clowning class? Was that abuse? That's the question. Or was it character building? No, I, well, you know, it's funny because it's, you know what I realize? I'm getting now all the 10-year reunion.
Of course.
This 10-year reunion emails because it's my 10-year college reunion.
Who's organizing yours? I organized mine.
I don't know. I'm just getting emails from the school. My class is weird. Like, I would not be surprised if, like, nobody really stepped up and kind of organized it. I would not be surprised. But, because we were a really tight cast, but our class. But anyway, but yeah, so this is an interesting topic because, yeah, especially, like, this is on my mind with the reunion coming up. And I've been thinking a lot about this.
Did you ever think about anything? Because, you know, just to be clear, there's a big difference between an acting conservatory and a liberal arts program, right?
Right.
You know, for example, where Mike and I went to school, the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, we didn't pick our classes. The only classes you chose were your, what do they call them? The ones that were non-arts.
Your general academic. I forgot what they actual.
You know what?
General. yeah, I remember. Like, well, what? Well, okay. Basically, to sum up the difference is, and by the way, I just have to say, I think it is important context because I don't. By the way, I think Joshua and I are going to have different opinions about this. But we went to what is considered to be, if you look at all the lists, always in the top five acting schools in not just the country, in the world. If you look at lists, it's always in the top five.
Look at the lists.
Look at the lists, like Hollywood Reporter or whatever the fuck.
No,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It's considered, does that matter? I'm just saying because, you know, we didn't go to like, you know. So when we speak to this, I think it's an interesting context we have. I don't think that means anything. I'm just saying.
You're saying because, like, oh, we went to what is considered a specifically great school.
A very, very good conservatory.
Got it. Yeah.
And so the difference, I guess, between a, because I, yeah, my choice, I was going to go, I got a pretty big scholarship to NYU. So it was between NYU and, and North Carolina School of the Arts. And I got into other schools too, but those are the two I was kind of, because one was a, you know, because all even though NYU, I don't really know how that program works. You do get your BFA, your Bachelor of Fine Arts, but I think it's technically a liberal arts school. NYU is a liberal arts school. I don't know if Tisch is like the conservatory within it. I don't really know how it works.
I think so. I think Tisch is a conservatory. I don't.
Yeah. As I understand the difference really between like a liberal arts BA, and I'm assuming, I don't know if you can also get BFAs at liberal arts schools. I actually don't really know how that works.
I think you can. Maybe we don't know enough about this topic.
but like, yeah, can you get a liberal, like if I went to Vassar? You know, I know a lot. It's funny. I run into a lot of actors because I've just been in certain circles who like went to Vassar, who are great actors. I think they got their BAs. That's definitely a liberal arts school. They got their Bachelor of Arts in theater or acting or whatever.
Well, I do think, but well, I it's in, yeah, no, it's interesting. It's interesting because I in short, you know, this is not a conversation about conservatory versus liberal arts. It's essentially asking if acting conservatory was worth it. But I think the assumption is what when the distinction we're trying to make is in a lot of instances, you can double major someplace else. Like you can go to a school where you can you can't double right. major at a place like the School of the Arts. And somewhat similarly, and I'm curious what made you go there. I was offered, excuse me, a full ride to Boston Conservatory for musical theater.
Yes.
And then I chose the School of the Arts as well. Why did you choose the School of the Arts over Tisch?
I think it was like, I really did see it as like a choice between like liberal arts and like a conservatory.
Interesting.
I did see it like that. North Carolina, like there was something about, and when I went to the campus, it was just the vibe and everything was like magic on that campus. You know, it's just like, it's out in the middle of, and I had never been down south really before.
Same.
Me and my dad drove down there and you know, my dad even was a little, and he's not like Mr. Progressive or some shit, but like he was even a little like, okay, like, you know, he was a little weird about going down there, about like seeing what it was all about. But, you know, I just remember being, it felt like summer camp, basically.
Yeah.
It felt like you were just going there to do that thing, and it felt very intense. Whereas, yeah. you know, and yes, there was part of me that was like, oh, if I go to NYU, then I could audition or I could get, you know, New York experience or whatever the fuck it was. And I remember that was a consideration, but I remember feeling like North Carolina School of the Arts was going to be more intense because also I will say this about Tisch and whatever, like, you know, they take a lot of people. I'm not saying that it's any whatever. I don't know anything about, I know people who teach there and shit, but like, you know, they take, you know, the classes are bigger. They have a high, whereas like, you know, School of the Arts as like, you know, they take 28 people per class, right? So it's like a small class, a small ensemble each year. And the final thing I'll say about sort of the difference, then I'll ask you why you chose there, but you know, the difference I think between a conservatory and a BA program practically is probably that you don't have as many academic courses. I think you do the bare minimum academic amount. And yeah, there's less flexibility in what you choose. So you can't be like, you know,
well, what flexibility at all? I mean, where we went to school, did you ever, you didn't get to pick no what classes you took.
Well, there was a fight, and this is interesting. I don't know if you should talk about the changing nature of these conservatories now, but I remember there was like a fight going on, even when I was there, that was like, oh, more cross. I want to do more stuff with the film school, or I want to be in, and the old school, like, faculty was like, no, like, you do, this is what you right. do. Like, I even right. remember when kids were self-producing, I remember Kevin Carrillo.
I was just reading about him. He just posted something this morning.
Well, he just got a fellowship somewhere, but he was
okay,
in,
that's what.
He's a director, but he right. self-produced like a two-hander, like in one of the studios, like him and this other Carissa in my class. And I remember they just did it on the weekend, like two performances, and invited people in the studio. No big deal. I remember like the faculty was not happy about that.
Yeah, that was all my years. I mean, Hedwig started when we were still in school. We were auditioning the students. They did
and
not
I'm sure
like
the teachers didn't like it, right? Because they don't want you. So, like when I think of a conservatory, it's very controlled. But it's like, this is the curriculum, this is the philosophy, this is what we do. These are the classes you take. Don't stray outside. Like, you're basically here to like do what we say. That's what I think about when I think about conservatory. What made you choose North Carolina School of the Arts over BOCO?
Well, so I really wanted to go MT. I really wanted to go for musical theater. I was interested right. in Carnegie Mellon, CCM, all the basics, Michigan, BOCO. BOCO was actually my number one. but Mike, there was this, Labad, there was this weird thing that was happening when I was auditioning. Three schools, Ithaca, CCM, And my, I forget which, there was another school that all in my auditions, they said, great, after I would sing my songs and do my monologues, are you interested in our acting program? So that was the first thing that it was this weird thing of like, what do you mean? Like, why do they keep asking me that? Like, can't I sing? You know, they were funny about it. And I'll tell you, I didn't even apply to the School of the Arts. I was a walk-in. I saw the sign and I popped my head in to Robert Bessner and Robert Francesconi. And I said, are there any more slots for today? And Robert Bessner was like, well, have you even applied for the school, dear young man? And I said, not yet. I actually only learned about it yesterday because I hadn't even heard about the school. And he said, well, lucky for you, we have one more spot open. And so I came back and I was the last of the day. And I'll tell you something, Mike. Excuse me. I feel like I'm
You can call me Mike. It's fine. It's just my perfect. I know. You feel like
you're like dead naming you.
Yeah, exactly. Dead naming me. It's Rex. It's Seed. My name is Seed now.
So I go. So I go in, and then it was honestly the first time I actually had felt seen. No, but really, they spent 30 minutes. I was in there for 30 minutes. They talked to me. They were all, I mean, they were curious about who I was, what my interests were, what my background was. They worked with me, and I felt so taken care of. And then, this is really gay, but The Light in the Piazza was in previews when I had gotten my acceptance. And I went to see the show, and so this is many moons ago now. And I remember there's that line in the show. The Kelly O'Hara character sings "In Winston Salem," and she like sang it, and I was in the audience, and I was like, "It's a sign. The gay gods are looking down on me. I have to go." So that's why I went to the School of the Arts. Slay all day, bae. Anyway, so just to say something again about the conservatory versus liberal arts, and then we'll start to get into, our perspectives on whether it was worth it or not. In a general sense, I would also argue that people, kind of like what you were saying, people, or maybe what I was saying, people sort of consider the difference between conservatory and a liberal arts program as an options, right? So if I go to a conservatory, I am doing that thing. I'm going to a conservatory for dance or violin or whatever, acting. And that is my primary focus. If I go to a liberal arts program, I can still learn my trade while also I can get my degree in psychology or marketing
minor
or whatever.
And,
exactly.
And you're getting as I understand it, maybe I do not know. It's sad. Yeah. And this is another thing about going to conservatory, right, is that you become kind of an idiot because it's like you don't really know much about the world because you're not learning a lot.
You're like, I want the conservative arts program.
Yeah, well, it's yeah, exactly. I thought you said conservative. What's all this? I thought this was the conservative arts program.
That's why Angela let you go.
I want to do a show about the Havana syndrome, the fucking psyops.
The Havana, is that the thing that made those people like,
yes,
like that was in the air, like these spies?
Yes,
yes, interesting.
Now nobody knows what that is, except that's how you know you've been on some Reddit threads, my friend.
I also just read. It's a thing that like people talk about.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Where's the play about that? Just people go like just stand there, and be like, ah,
just dropping dead one by
just
one,
just dropping dead. Just like, can you hear it? I guess what was crazy, wait, really quick about that. I guess what was crazy about that was because there's sonar weapons.
Oh, yeah, by the way, before you go in, Mike's a conspiracy theorist, just so you know. Keep going.
I'm not. But it was, but like, there's sonar weapons, right? So there is like a thing, they have like, I've seen them, they're like big things. So they just like pulsate sound at crowds and it's like incredibly. But you can't hear it.
It's just you doing it. That I'm like picturing like you as one of the characters. Like yours would be exactly. Yours would be the. It'd be a quite serious play, and then like Labod's turn at being attacked by
the sonar. I'd be like, exactly. But what's weird is that I guess what was weird about that. So anyway, they use them for crowd control. These like sonar weapons, but what's fucking crazy is that only specific people. It was very targeted. So it's not like right. everybody else around me was hearing it. It was just right. me hearing it.
Right.
I wonder
right.
what the fuck that was. China. China. I don't know. But,
you know, I got to say, I just got to say real quickly, just to say, I was watching a Trump speech the other day. I know we always talk about Trump on here. I was watching a Trump speech the other day. It is
the
wild.
Ultimate performer.
It is wild shit. To your point about China, he would say something like that. He literally says nothing. It is insane. Someone will be like, hey, what's today? What's today? Well, first I'll tell you now that there's lotion all over the floor, and that's because of the Democrats. And and he just goes on random fucking tangents. He just says shit. He doesn't even make thoughts. And people are so excited. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, no, because he's just giving hot takes on things that don't. Like, literally, they're like, yeah, it's like something. He's like, well, first off, you got to talk about China. It's like, yeah, literally, it's something.
Exactly. Exactly.
But, just to say the alternative is somebody who's literally dead. That's the alternative. That,
and
know,
and I will happily say, give me that alternative. 100%. We've had this conversation. There is no way in hell that Donald Trump. I would rather.
I would never vote in a million years vote for Donald Trump.
Rather Biden on a life support system.
I don't know if I can vote for a little corpse. I don't know.
No, and also, how ageist are we? Because look. Let me just say,
girl. No. Time out.
Let me finish my thought.
Okay.
He's not dead. And this is actually what's said. Think about your parents. Hear me out. In 20 years, when your parents are at a point when they're slowing down, but they're still cogent individuals. They just hear me out. Hear me out. I've been around a lot of old people. I've watched old people die. I understand how when as they get older, their faculty.
It sounds like you're saying
down.
I have a lot of black friends. That's what it sounds like you're saying right now. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I obviously he has a stutter, and obviously he probably does have cognitive decline.
The stutter was made up. Okay, but straight up, the stutter is fake.
See,
no, but seriously. By the way, it's not just there's a lot of progressives out there who agree with. He never had a stutter.
Where's the tape?
Hold on. He never had a stutter until he started getting old. Now they start talking about the stutter.
Even if that was true. Even if that is true.
Look at past interviews with him.
Great.
He never had a stutter.
Who cares?
I care because he has dementia. That's why I care. I can't vote for somebody who has dementia.
No. This is, by the way,
my opinion, this is what a lot of people think. This is if you look at polls, people say he is not,
I'm not saying
mentally
it's just you.
Fit
I'm not
to
just
be
saying it's just
a
you.
President.
I just think we're focusing on the if that's the argument next to sociopath crazy fuckwad, well, I don't care. I don't want to hear it. We should only be talking about one thing, and it's that crazy loser.
Well, see, this is the problem with party politics, I guess, because I completely disagree with you. You can't. So we shouldn't have to choose. We should not be in a position where we need to choose between a sociopath and a dead person. That should not be our two options. And that is a failure.
I think
to say like, no, I don't want to hear the other side of it is perpetuating the problem. That's perpetuating this fucked up system we're in, where the Democratic Party literally did not allow a democratic process. They did not allow. They took him, put him on the pedestal, did not allow for due process.
And just so you know, that's exactly. Do you know the new RNC head, and Mike John? You know, what I'm saying is that not the Democratic Party. That's politics, and I'm not saying that you're wrong, Mike. Excuse me. The Republicans and the Democrats are alike. It's because it's the game they play. You're so right that they've put people in place to maintain their power. And I don't disagree with you that there aren't enough options. And but I'm just saying that in a very basic sense, it feels black and white to me.
That's fair. I disagree, but that's not because I would ever a million years cast my vote for Donald Trump. That is never going to happen, but never. But that doesn't mean that to me. What I just, you know, I think there's gonna be a lot of third party turnout this year, which I understand in theory, but this is the problem, right? Where I just disagree with all of this is like, in theory, it's like, yes, just voting third party just hurt whatever. It's like, you know, yes, if you buy into a bullshit system and you keep perpetuating the problems of, okay, do I want to vote for the corpse or do I want to vote for the sociopath? It's like, I just corpse. Can't. Okay, that's you. I can't vote for a corpse.
Sure. Heard. And that's your right. And I respect that. I respect that. I really do. Okay. I don't know how we got there, but okay.
Well,
so
because you brought up Trump, that was your fault.
Yes. No fault. I
was talking about China.
Oh, that's right. So, and his speeches. Okay. So now let's skip to this part now where we're talking about, you know, essentially, asking us this question, was the school worth it? So I think
we lose all of everything because of that conversation.
No. I mean, I think it's
of the moment. And
you,
that's
like,
the
keep
thing.
Keep wanting to talk about it 25 more minutes.
It's of the moment. It's of the moment.
Sorry, I'm writing something down.
You're like,
so. Well, no, because let's talk about, was it worth it? So let's talk about, because we'll also talk about, what was your favorite part of school? What was your favorite part of going to conservatory?
Okay. Well, that's the thing, right? Is that, and that's the thing, because everybody thinks that their conservatory experience is very unique. But, you know, I've talked to people now who went to NYU grad or Juilliard or Carnegie Mellon or whatever, like, you know, and I feel like everybody has sort of the same general experiences. So even though it's, to me, it feels very North Carolina School of the Arts specific, I think that these probably apply to other things. For me, what was really special about School of the Arts was when I look back on the memories, the good memories I had there, they're always around my fellow students. More than even the classes or the performances or the whatever. Like, you know, it was more thinking about, oh, playing volleyball.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on a day off.
We had we had like a singular volleyball court on our tiny campus.
Oh, it was
incredible. We loved it.
No, and so like I'm thinking of like St. Patrick's Day. Like, okay, like literally my best memory of School of the Arts was St. Patrick's Day, my second year. We just got assigned our second year Shakespeare projects. So we just got assigned, everybody just got their parts, and we had the day, I forgot, maybe it was a Saturday, was St. Patrick's Day, I don't remember, I think it was a Saturday. So it was just like the whole camp, and this is in Winston, North Carolina, the weather was beautiful that day, it was all green, and then there's like a beautiful hill, and everybody was out, and we were biking, and we were drinking, and, you know, smoking a little ganj, and playing volleyball, and I remember just like, what was so special about School of the Arts was the environment. It felt like you were at summer camp because, like, literally, you're walking and there's like dancers like over there,
truly,
like in their tights, and then there's
some guy
there's
playing
the
a trumpet. Exactly,
some guy playing a trumpet. It was, and it's this tiny little campus with like
literally
with
sound
like
stages.
People.
Sound stages, 500 feet,
yes,
from the
film
hill.
Professional. Exactly, yeah. They had a film village, yeah, where it was like this,
ugh,
huge,
gorgeous,
like industry sound stages,
so right,
and the environment.
So true.
Of School of the Arts was magic.
It still is to this day. When I go back, I love it.
It's, yeah, I haven't been back in a while, but I just remember that, like, in the energy and the passion,
yes,
and young people, and everybody's,
yes,
so hot. I
yes,
mean, everybody's,
yes,
hot.
Yes.
And everybody's fucking. Yeah. And it was just like, no, but that was, yes, part of it. It was like, you know, and you're bonding, and what was really magical is like, yeah, you're going through, like, basically, with, you know, it's kind of like trauma bonding with all of these people. with all of these ensemble members, with these cast people, you know, and I'll never forget, you know, whatever, this is a, what time are we supposed to be? Oh, we got time. You know, I remember we do this thing called trialogues. This to me sums up School of the Arts. 2 weeks into school.
We didn't do those. we did freshman monologues. No, I know what you're talking about. No, we but I did have Jordy, but we didn't do this. I know what you're talking about, though, because I've talked about
those. So, so basically what the trialogues was, Jordy was the Linklater and Alexander teacher.
Still is.
And still is. And, you know, we would what was it, a dream? It was something like, I don't even remember. It was like you would come in with, like, that's the thing. I don't remember the training very well, but it was like you had like a dream and you like write the dream out. And it was like these characters in the dream. So it's like there was like a centaur and like a squirrel and like, and they have a conversation. And it's almost like Jungian dream work now that I think about it. It's something like that. But then you give voice. And then so basically everybody comes in. And then what was crazy was this is 2 weeks into school. And we were strangers. You barely know these people. You barely know these people. Freshman year, you're 18 years old. And we're all in a circle and the lights are dim. And it's like, you sit there and Jordy like puts his hands on you, you know, on your, and he's like,
that doesn't
sound, what do you think this dream means? And he's like, you know, he's kind of talking you through the dream and you're like, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you realize, oh, it's about my mom or it's about my, like the guy who, I'm not trying to be funny. Like the guy who, I'm not trying to be funny. That's such a bad disclaimer. The guy who like sexually assaulted me, like when I was like 12. It's
well,
like,
you did it. You're funny. That's funny.
I know, but no, I didn't want to. Fuck. But it's like, you know, it's,
you
like
know,
the
guy,
or like, you know, my ex or whatever, and it's like, who's the dream really about? And you're doing this, and then he's like, say what you want to say to them, and then you're like, how could you do this to me? Like, you right. know, it's like, you never saw me, you never loved me. And it's like literally like he has your hand and you're screaming,
yep,
sobbing. And it was yep. the same thing at, like, this woman whose dad died. It was like crazy shit, and you're doing, and I remember I did mine, and this is like, yeah, this was probably like the fourth class, not even, maybe like the third class we had with them, and I'm screaming, crying in front of strangers. And then right after that, and it was the biggest release I'd ever had in my life. It was like, and I said some shit that was like I never said in my life before, you know, crazy shit. I was like, Trump 2024. No.
Well, no. But was this your favorite part, or you're just saying this was like,
well,
a crazy
part? Well, I'm saying
part.
This. Well, this is what I love about it, is that uh-huh. like, okay, so you do that, you're drained, and then that night we fucking partied. We went to a guy's dad house who lived in High Point. It was in my class. And we had a rager. And that was the school. It's like you're bearing your soul, and then you're going out and you're like, doing drugs and getting fucking drunk and fucking. It was
listen,
just like that.
Do you? But okay. Do you want to think funny about the drug stuff? So I've never really been like a big drug person or a big drinker. That's not. Although every time, it's so funny. Every time I say that kind of shit, Michael calls me up, because every time we see someone from my class, like, remember when you drank that whole entire bottle, like the hello. Larger than average bottle of wine, and like,
I
you know,
it.
Did crazy shit. But I'll tell you this: I was actually on alcohol and drug probation when I was in school. But here's what's ironic. This was not me. I didn't drink until I got to school.
Uh-huh.
And I really didn't do any drugs while I was there. But I do remember there was one of these early parties where I was drinking my grandmother's drink, which I still drink to this day, Stoli Cranberry Splash of OJ and a Lime, which, of course, when I get to this like house party, I'm like, I'll have a Stoli Cranberry Splash of OJ and a Lime, please.
My God.
Meanwhile, they're probably just like, you know,
they're like, here's rubbing alcohol in the punch.
Exactly. But I'll never forget. So I was standing there, and then the police showed up, and it's a huge house party. Everybody runs, but
yep,
me.
Yep, that happens.
But
you
me,
didn't run?
I'm standing there. Not only that, I open the door. Hello. Not my house. Holding the drink. Hello. Good evening. I mean, not like that, really, but I was like, I don't know what to do.
Basically.
And so then they, you know, wrote me a ticket, and then I had to, like, go to therapy. I remember I had to go to therapy and go to and pee in a cup. And I remember going, being in this therapy, and I'm like, you know, there are people, I said, I'm talking to this woman, I said, there are people who are right now are doing cocaine 100 feet away from us.
You just like rat on everybody? You just like, you let the cops in. total narc. You let the cops in, then you're like, do you know so and so? You're just giving names.
But the point was that it was insane. And then I appealed it, and I was like, I'm not coming here anymore. And then I literally just stopped going. I was like, this isn't ridiculous, because it wasn't even my vibe. Okay, so my favorite part of school.
Yeah, what was
and
your
then we'll
favorite
move on
part?
From this. Just to say, it's quite simple. My favorite part of school, and Michael and I talk about this a lot sometimes, is just our lives were every day, all day, art, creativity.
Yes.
You got up and for me, because I was producing so much, and I didn't end up taking any of the academics because I was so singularly focused on doing.
So you got a certificate. Did you even get your BFA?
I got my BFA. There was a so from morning to night, I mean, truly, I would get up at like 7 a.m. and from like 7 a.m. until 1 a.m. 2 a.m. you know, you were making art all day in rehearsals, making your own things. It was nonstop, and it was a time of my life that I'll never forget. And I would argue that you know, when we talked about that from the financial freedom and creative and financial freedom and what that means to me.
Yeah.
Well, it's what I try to chase to this day, every day. It's all I want my life to be. I mean, no shit, but because obviously it's what people want, but I'm serious. But I was journaling about this morning. Breakdown in tears. You know this about me. It's not that people in my life aren't important. It's not that other experiences in my life aren't important. But I prioritize my creative life for whatever reason. I'm sure it stems all the way back to some form of trauma, overly used word, but you know, that every day is about, that's all I want my life to be consumed by, just to some extent. And even us working, you know, this podcast and artist strategy, to me, they sync up. The world sync up for me. And so even though it's like other elements of my skill set and work, it's me always chasing, which is getting back to the question, that favorite part of what school was for me, which was morning, noon, tonight, you know, my life being driven by what I want to create, period.
Well, you know, and yeah, I think you're right. It's to me, it's about the environment. I think it's kind of what we're both hitting on here is like,
yes,
the culture of, you know, it was the extreme. It was, yeah, you're making art all day. You're learning. You're growing. You're in great shape because, like, you're dancing. You're warming. You're, like, you feel great in your body. And, like, and it was just, you know, the final thing I'll say, too, about it is a raw experience. It felt, like, so raw. And the reason why I bring up, like, you know, one minute you're, like, sobbing in class, and the next minute you're, like, I mean, I'm not trying to be vulgar. It's just like, you know, it's like you're one day you're sobbing and, you know, literally you're sobbing in class. 2 hours later, you're like fucking like a 10 dancer. It's like it's just like the extreme raw environment.
I do think that you and I might have had slightly different college experiences, but not in a
girl.
Bad way.
Where you get? I think you were getting dicked down a fair amount. Dicking down.
Let me be clear. It's not that I'm not prescribing to what you are saying. I'm simply saying that I actually think that it's in your DNA. It's who you are. I said this to you a few months ago. You are a fun person. You seek out fun. You are a very social person. You are very much an extrovert. It's part of your DNA to be like, yeah, I'm going to work. You work so hard and you play hard. Like that is like your vibe. And so all I'm saying, and actually, if I may, Labade.
Yeah.
I could use more of that, actually. I'm a little myopic, and so my life was actually a bit too focused on just my work at the school, too.
No, that's fair.
You know what I mean?
And I was, and just to be clear, I was in the studios till 2 a.m.
Exactly.
Working on,
exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, you're right. It's like that to me, that's what the fun of the school was like it was the intensity of the social experience, honestly, paired with the artistic experience. That to me was
So what was your least favorite part of school?
Well, I don't looking back, because I loved my experience there. So I didn't have a part I didn't like about it. While I was there, I loved it. But I look back now, and this is my overall critique, I guess. I didn't really learn how to act there. That's kind of my major critique, is that I didn't have surprise. The whole point of going to a conservatory, which is why I'm sure, like, look, these kids now, you know, the whole point of going to school, it was like a trade school where you were going to learn a foundational skill set and be able to come out to the world like a craftsperson. That was the pitch.
Right.
And you come out and you're like, I have all these skills and I know all these things. Now, mind you, like, voice training, Linklater, all that, like, that stuff is so fucking important. Like, that stuff, absolutely. That's like a hard skill that I have of, like, I have no problem. You know, I warm up, I can be heard very clearly, you know, whatever, and shit like that. But
I can be heard. Yes.
And I can be heard. No, but that's a skill set. But hey, look, there are people who don't have training.
I'm going through it right now.
Who louder. You can't hear people. Exactly. Louder. You can't hear people. Yeah. And, but the biggest problem was because it was such a raw state experience, because it was just the environment and it was, they were breaking you down constantly and you were kind of living at a 10. I actually didn't learn any foundational acting skills, I feel like, which is therefore I was always chasing like a state or something like that, as opposed to like, wait, when I get a script, what do I do? And I don't think that's the fault of the school per se. I think that you have to probably be, look, the thing is with acting training, I don't know if anybody should be... You have to sort of, you know, there's, it's one thing to be in class nonstop, and then it's another thing to be working and to be like, what am I going to do? Or get sides and realize like, oh, all the shit I learned in class doesn't actually really help me. You know, that's something that you just have to learn on your own.
Sure.
But when I think about the problems I have with school, there are these two problems. It's like I said, it's like I had to teach myself acting in the real world. I still had to teach myself how to act. Like, you know, I left there and didn't feel like I had actually the confidence I needed, even though I was, like, you know, totally privileged there, got a lot of leads and like was very like, you know, this. And the other problem is honestly dogma. There's still dogma behind. Whenever you have an acting teacher, that what you risk and what I've been very allergic to is this is what good acting is. This is how,
of course,
especially, you know, oh, there's no subtext in Shakespeare, or you always have to be doing something, or you have to. Well, who says that? That's the big problem with, you know, but any training.
Yeah, but it's so funny you say that, because I actually don't disagree with that. But like, to me, that's kind of an obvious. Let me hear me out when I say this. A lot of times, like whenever I work or am teaching acting or working with actors and who are trying to develop a process, you know, but like, you know, there are so many schools of thought. You know, you have to discover that for yourself. You know, and conservatory, for example, is obviously, or some sort of initial training program is a step one. It is initial. And then, you know, and which I would argue, and what our dean, Gerald Friedman, I would argue did well, is he had a point of view. So now it might not be everybody else's point of view.
No.
You know, there's all kinds of, just to be clear, there are so many processes, tools, styles. I mean, you know, and the way we learn in America, you know, is based off of, you know, Stanislavski. That's the primary of our of modern acting technique. There's that great book we read, Mike. Remember that? On
Actor
the
develop prepares.
No.
The method.
The method. How the 20th century learned to act. That really still remains the baseline of modern acting technique. And I'm just saying it because you're so right. But that's, I guess an interesting program could be, here are 8 different techniques, you know, we'll teach you them all.
And then, I don't know if that's effective. Yeah, per sure. Your point, I don't know if that's effective. And, you know, you're right. That's the thing is, I don't know if that's a critique of the school or if that's just a critique of just training in general. Is that, and per your point, but you feel like the difference is at school. Is that you have like these people who are basically gods who have complete and total power. You know, and you, at least if you're very insecure like me or very people pleasing or wanting validation, like you take their word for gospel.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's like, and so it's difficult to, you know what it is? My major critique, and then you should go, is that you're not given an opportunity to develop your own unique artistry, in my opinion, because of the environment, because of how it's structured. It's more about this is what it is. This is what you should be trying to reach and discover and get to, as opposed to, well, what is your point of view? What is you on art, on whatever, on da da da?
Yeah.
And so that is what I think. My major critique is, you know, but what's your critique?
Well, the question is the least favorite part of what school was for us.
Sure.
Because I do want to get into the specifics of how we were prepared or not prepared. And for me, to be honest with you, and you've heard me say this before, as someone who has always done multiple things, who has always produced or directed or done other things besides just act, and including, you know, all these conversations we have, this work that we engage with, you know, my sense of being treated like less than an artist stems back to school. Because when I was there, to be 100% with you, I did not really feel respected or cared for as an actor. I did not feel like I was being taken seriously as some other people. And I voiced the concern. I said, I don't think you are treating me. For example, I had a handful of fine parts. So anybody who listens and is like, this isn't true. I didn't have multiple leads. It's not like I was like, right. like they weren't like trying to prop right. me up as an actor. And that was not, I still really hold a lot of resentment because, actually somewhat similarly to you, while I actually do think I was prepared quite a bit from a craft perspective, and I want to talk more about, and I have a specific example that I want to give that I think has prepared us more than we may realize. It's kind of sure. similarly, I didn't really feel like I learned how to act or, you know, was really taken seriously until I left and moved to DC and started doing some really exciting shit that where I was like, oh, okay, great. I do have this skill set. Okay. So let's chitty chat about preparation though, more specifically, because we start, and you know what, let's start from this big one. Cause I actually think the craft is the big one. So,
I mean, that's
so
the whole point. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Well, it is the whole point.
Yeah, but
that's kind of what we're talking about. So you believe for your money, you sort of said it that just craft wise, you did not ultimately feel like the school prepared you as best it could.
I think that's accurate.
What elements of craft do you feel like you were prepared?
Well, you know, because let me say this. Because this is important, because this kind of sums up everything for me. What's hard about school, what's hard about it is that you have to go all in to take, you know, it's funny. It's like when the older people, because like we went to school, it's like there were 35-year-olds in my class, and then there were 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those programs. And the people who had some skepticism or, like, did not kind of buy it hand over, like, you know, were not just, like, anything. The reason why I was successful there was because I was, like, I am ready. I was the perfect. I was, like, anything, everything, tear me down. I'll do anything. I did not have a lot of skepticism. I was down for whatever. And where am I going with this? It's all a blur, man. I remember very little about class, very little about the lessons, because because you're in a state the whole time. You're in, like, a heightened, almost dreamlike state the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
That there's very little time in my experience to reflect, to actually go down to the brass tacks and be like, okay, well, what was the technique or the process that I learned? The whole experience, because you're literally doing breath work and screaming and, like, physical activity, and then, like, you're getting up there and you have teachers coaching you, breaking you down. I walked away with feelings of what it was, but no
it's
foundational
interesting. It's,
principles.
But it's fascinating because I would maybe I'm being dismissive with this thought, but it feels a little bit, and because we've talked about this, I think there is a bit of a point of view that you should go to acting school for 4 years when you're 18 years old, and then you're done. And the reason why I'm bringing this up in relation to it is because, like, that's what we're saying. That was step one. And to your point about the
but
the
that's
whole
not what they fostered there. I agree with you,
course.
But if that was the framework of which, like, hey, Declan Donnellan's, this is not true. It may be useful. Your training will continue forever. We were the environment of that school was, this is it. What you're going to get here is going to be it. That was the whole, what we say here is everything. And there was a vibe of, like, yeah, you're going to graduate here and you're going to start working immediately, which is a whole other conversation that we're going to have. But, like, that was the environment. It wasn't, that was sort of the message we were sent. It wasn't a message of, this is step one on your artistic journey.
Of course, of course. But in this first half, also, let's focus on, like, what all these things also did do. And the only reason I'm saying it is because I think they're important. Because I hear you. I don't disagree with you. But let me counter that for a quick second.
Oh, I know. You asked me about the craft.
No, exactly, exactly. It sounds like I'm dismissing what you're saying. I'm not. But, like, I'm not trying to, at least. And also, I just reread The Actor on the Target. I forget how much I can't stand that book. And let me just tell you why. So heady. I think it's a translation, right? That's why it's so, like,
Russian.
Verbose. And I that book is really tricky for me.
It's not for
conceptual.
Everybody. It is very conceptual. You're 100% right.
Like,
very
I'm just sort of like, can't we say this simpler? Like, why is it so poetic? I don't know. Maybe
I completely agree with you.
But for me, I just want to say, and I'll tell you, so there's a couple of things that for me that really worked, how the school prepared me from a craft perspective. Some of it's macro and some of it's micro. One, I do think that it was where I started to develop a sense of identity for myself, you know, to go, you know, it's so basic, but it's where I came out, you know, like I started to develop a sense of identity. I will also say, working with artists at such a high caliber, both some of the actors that were in the program, also the some of our teachers and some of the guest artists, John Langs, et cetera, you know, that were just at another level, you know, and part of what that did was help us, I would argue, develop a sense of work ethic. A sense of pace.
Yes.
The whole environment was a sense of pace. Pressure. There was a great deal of pressure at the school. You constantly were being put in these positions where you had...
That's true.
Ever there was second year Shakespeare's or showcase or the model. It was always like there was like an event you were working towards.
School of the Arts people are prepared. Look, I mean, you know, School of the Arts people that I've worked with, they're always... they're prepared and they're professional and they're, yeah.
I'll tell you the moment when I went, oh, thank God I went to school.
Yeah.
When I joined Les Mis, I had 2 weeks to learn four tracks, and I started with Thénardier when I started performances. And Mike, you know, I'm a pretty hard worker. Just as is, and I think I have enough talent that allows me to capitalize on that, on both those things. But I'll tell you, when I finished going into that show, like after those couple of weeks, I remember thinking, who could do this? Who could do what I just did? It was so insane what I had done in 2 weeks. And I'm not patting myself on the back. I actually was like, thank God I went to that school, because I there were so many things I was using, or again, just the idea of pace and pressure that had been instilled in me.
Well, standards, yes. And you know, because I had a similar experience of like, you know, when I had to learn Joan and Hamlet, you know, in like a week, a week and a half, it was like... And I think what that was, it wasn't so much the tools that I used for me personally. It was the standard. What I agree with you is it's a professional standard of like, you don't bitch and complain, like you learn it. And not only you learn it, you do it great.
Right.
And that I completely agree with you is instilled a sense of standards. It instilled a sense of work ethic.
Right.
And a sense of professionalism. And yeah.
Now, of course, there's so many examples, you know, and let's do the counter, though, because from a craft perspective, I mean, you were sort of saying it. I'll also just say that I think it kind of relates back to what I said was my least favorite part. I didn't understand the full scope of what I was capable of. I didn't feel like I had actually been stretched enough as an actor.
Yep.
So I didn't have the same confidence that I should have had leaving the school, in a way that made me know that I could do what I was capable of. And just to say, certainly with film and television, there was a lot lacking.
Oh, yes.
A lot lacking. We did not really collaborate with the film school as much as we should. I did a few films there, but I really didn't collaborate with them. Our class, you know, we don't have to say names. That was not good. That was not real. That was, you know what I'm saying?
What was not real?
Our film class, our TV, you know, our on-camera class.
Oh, yes. Yeah, ours was not either. Yes. But, you know, here's my big problem with the training, I'm realizing, too. It's kind of like, I feel like you're doing good work because you're being whipped up into a state. And then, you know, you can't really take that and run with it in the real world. You know, you can't always be like living a life of like insane. Maybe you can. I don't know. But my big problem with the training was, and this is why, you know, when you talk about Actor in the Target, because Actor in the Target is almost like the anti-American style of training in a lot of ways. It's almost like, in the sense of why, what I have, look, and maybe this is step one, right, to this, but there was so much of a focus on me, myself, and I there.
Sure.
On what I was going through, on what I was feeling. And that's where I really became, that was almost my Garden of Eden, because I became aware of, you know, like the apple in the garden, because like that's where I became self-aware really for the first time, because we were doing so much work on ourselves, on our habits, on our pasts, on our beliefs and all this shit, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but that was, you know, that is American style acting training, is that it's all based out of psychotherapy, basically. It's all kind of arose from, you know, psychotherapy. It all kind of came from Freud, and like that's kind of what the Moscow Art Theater took. And like, so American acting training has a basis in psychotherapy, basically, and self-awareness. And that is not useful for me. As
sure.
an actor.
Sure.
Self awareness and looking into myself is actually not helpful.
Industry knowledge, which LOL. I don't. What?
You push it by that. You have no thoughts about that?
Oh no, really? I'm just trying to get to these other ones for time. But no, but well, I don't think. Well, what I was thinking about actually when you were saying that was about how we wear, you know, we wear blacks, which is nothing new. You know, that's although they're losing that. But I'm saying it because, while I do think that first and second year was about somewhat understanding that, there was also like, remember when we did. Not only do we wear blacks to class because the whole concept was that we're a neutral body in the space, but even our mask to red nose progression starts in black facehood. Yes. So I say this because there were elements that were super self-centric. And then I thought there really were elements that were so not about you. And so I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I actually feel like we've moved more towards identity acting training, you know, than
that's
than
probably accurate
when we were there. Period. That's what I was
okay.
thinking.
Okay. Industry knowledge.
Industry knowledge. So this is which I do think is different than business knowledge. I think it's just like how does the industry work? What are you stepping into? And I just want to say top level that you know, we probably got more than most because of some of the guests we had and the reps that came and, you know, just some of the people that graduated from our school. But I do have to say, sorry, let me start by saying how I do think it prepared us. I think that, you know, we were aware of what people were doing and that there was, you know, some segments of the industry that made more sense just by way of success stories or the guests that were coming. Plus, at some of our faculty, and I would, you know, very much Gerald, our dean, was sort of entrenched in the industry. Dale Gerard, our combat guy, was, you know, super active. And so there people we had, I think, realistic expectations from an industry standpoint. That's how I thought it prepared us. How did you think it prepared?
Yeah, I think the good. If I were to start with the good, would probably be like, it's difficult. I mean, yes, the exposure, meeting the casting people, all of that really helpful. Like that was, and that's more than a lot. Listen, you know, the BFA program at University of Iowa or some shit like that. Are they getting, you know,
exactly,
the best casting directors in the world?
Right.
Or the most working to come to their school? Like, right. I don't know. Probably not. And so, you know, or reps at like great offices and that opportunity. That's really where it doesn't, where for me, it doesn't quite prepare you industry wise. This is separate from business wise, maybe, is I have the exact opposite experience. No realistic expectations. I don't think people had a real, I think that it wasn't instilled in us. Like, you guys don't get it. Like, it is not going to be easy out there. In fact, right. most right. of you will not be doing this.
Right.
That is how challenging it is. And I
right.
know, and listen, the thing is, look, we've worked with students at schools with our yeah. work and whatever. Like, I don't know how open you, I don't know if it was me not, because I remember vaguely people saying that, but like, I just so couldn't receive that, you know, so.
Well, no, it's know, funny you but, say this. I led a workshop. I led two classes last week for my buddy, Danny Yorgis, who went to school. You remember Danny. He teaches at Millikan University. So I was, and he just became a dad again. He has two kids now. So
oh,
he, so us, Brian Suto, a bunch of us have been like subbing for his classes just to like on his paternity leave. And although I don't really think it's paternity leave when you have to find all the subs for your teachers, your
LOL.
Classes, by the way.
LOL.
But, but I was meeting with these kids for 2 days and I was basically doing an overview of so much of what we talk about. And again, you just, to your point though, I actually understand why these schools, because now going into, yeah, what they didn't prepare us for, I think you're right. Like, there's no real come to Jesus. There's no, they're not really giving these young people, us young people, what we really need to understand about how challenging this is going to be. They instead, I would argue, and I think you probably agree to this, play into our dreams and fantasies.
And I think that, to be clear, how that could be resolved, which I don't know how useful that would be in the beginning, but it has to be from the beginning. It has to be like one of the first
from
weeks
the beginning.
Of school. You say, like, listen.
Yes.
You're here. That's great.
Yes.
But this is what we're here. Because then it puts into perspective, like, okay, like, why am I here? You know, like, why am I really here? If there's no guarantee, just because I graduate with this degree and from this great program, that I'm ever going to work, ever.
Exactly.
Ever have a professional job.
Exactly. Exactly.
Then it could, but then probably what would happen is, I bet you they would scare away a lot of people. That's probably what would happen.
Exactly. Exactly. No, listen, you know what it is? You're because look, you know, we talk a lot about this, but it has always been true, and I think it is the most true it's ever been today. The expectation that your 4 years at a conservatory are going to lead to a showcase where you are going to get some great reps that are going to somehow magically send you out week two of being in whatever major city you're in, and that you're going to book those, you know, going to get a couple of offers within your few months. The next thing you know, you're going to be recurring in a TV show. BS. And I know that's what they want you to set your sights on. But the truth is that when it comes to industry knowledge specifically, what should be taught, right, what we're talking about, what, to your point about day one, not only is it going to be challenging, but fuck the showcase. Literally, LOL. Like, use it, but consider it like another day in the park.
But this
otherwise,
is what's challenging, yeah.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, but what's challenging, and again, we're talking about North Carolina School of the Arts, where, to be clear, yes, I would say at least one person in every single class has that very experience, which is more than, you know, and you talk about Yale, NYU grad, Juilliard, like, same thing. Like, you know, I would say out of every class, three people do graduate, around three people, two to three people graduate and do just like, they graduate school and they work forever. And that's it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
And so, whereas maybe that expectation would be more realistic if I did go to blank, blank program, and I did not see that happening often.
Sure.
But like, you know, hard about where we went.
I see these kids. I mean, I've been to a lot of different universities and even some of the really wackadoodle ones. And I mean that in a rude way.
Yeah.
Even the wackadoodle ones, they have the same, or if I may, They have like no expectation. They're just sort of like, I don't know. I'm gonna go and do it.
Yes,
you know, no direction. Literally zero.
Yes,
just
at least
show
like
up.
I guess when you're graduating from, you know, something like School of the Arts, like you have models, like you see, oh, this guy who I was really good friends with, who was a grade above me, is a series regular on X show 2 months out of graduation.
Exactly.
That's like, so you have, what's hard is like, you're so, what's hard about that is that you're right there because you're surrounded by people who are going to be stars.
Right. Right.
And it's like, yeah, it's like if you go to Juilliard, like, to be clear, a couple people in your class are going to be stars.
Sure.
But not everybody. And not a major. I would argue not a major. Even at Yale, even at whatever.
Well, because you know, because you know what I always come back to with this that I always really love, and we've talked about. Not all people are created equal when it comes to circumstance, resources, goals, personal workflow, talent, all of the above. You are not all created equal. Therefore, and the real point that I want to make by saying that is, it costs something different for everyone.
Correct.
And so to your point you're making, if we all go, well, shouldn't I have the same thing?
No.
Don't I deserve that too? What about me? You know, that's it's an unfortunate perspective because you're going to likely be disappointed by the outcome because it's just not based in any sense of truth.
Right.
You know?
The expectations thing is what really is
sure.
And I don't, but I, again, the reason why I don't know if I can, it's because what could have they have done but like having realistic expectations about what graduation would have been like to me is, and what a life of an actor is really, would have been useful. From an, now from a business perspective, look, I think the major problem with conservatory, at least when we were going, it might be a little different now, is you're an, is what you keep bringing up, is you're just an actor. You are just an actor, right. And you're not being, this is number one. Number one is that you are not given, you know, when I was at school, it was changing a little bit with Carl, because Carl started doing Keys to the Kingdom, and he was, sure. You know, because he wasn't like a, he was a career director, but he started a theater company in New York. And so we started producing more at school, but you know, I don't know at Yale School of Drama. I don't know. I know that they produce cabaret shit like that. I don't know at Carnegie Mellon. I don't know what the self produce if these kids are encouraged to make their own.
Yeah, but
work.
Also, I just want to say something about, like, he's, because that's great, and I wish we had that. Well, of course, we had intensive arts, and maybe it's a good way to pivot to the business knowledge piece of this. But yes. The problem is, Keys to the Kingdom, of course, promotes self-creation, which is amazing. And I didn't have it, but I understand what it is because Michael told me a lot about it. But for example, I would argue that, you know, and I know I'm asking probably too much here, but I would argue that fundraising as a skill,
sure,
would be invaluable in conjunction with the idea of creating your own work, because sometimes creating your own work is almost seemingly sold as a placeholder for, like, until someone else picks you.
That's fair.
As opposed to
the job.
What is the job of a producer? Not a self-producer for my self-made work, but I'm producing my career. Do I understand what that takes and what skill sets I need to continue to sharpen in order to do that? Because, you know, just to say now, from a business perspective, this is obviously no shocker where my opinion is, like, you know, we had the business with Bess at a class, and I love him. But, you know, it was kind of almost as basic as it gets in terms of literally, here's a resume, this is a headshot, and here are some general tax considerations, you know, and or taking meetings with reps and the like. But there, especially today, I'm sorry, but I don't even know if I would have said this 5 years ago, but especially today, every program should be going, okay, should have a social media component where they are teaching students how to create content. A content creation class unto itself should be a consideration. And so besides those basics, I just have to say I'm pretty negative when it comes to business knowledge. I don't think these schools are preparing people practically at all.
Well, because they're teaching them the wrong job, right? Because your job is not to act when you graduate. Like, that's not, but what they're preparing you for, and this has to do with expectations too, is like, okay, we're assuming that you're going to leave the school and just work, and the work is magically going to come. So your job is just to be a good actor. Right. That's not the job. That's right. Not the job.
Right.
The job is to get work. And so, or the job is to get work / make work.
Right.
Like, that is the job. And so when it comes to that, kind of just period, point blank, the end to what you're saying is, like, you are not taught that at all. You are taught none of that. You are not taught how to get work. You are not taught how to cultivate people in the business. You're not taught to how to self-produce in any meaningful way. It's like, you know, there's, in terms of, like, industry, you know, because everything is sort of supported by the school, like, even now. So it's like you're not taught how to self, like, fundraise. You're not taught how to, like, market it. You're not taught how to do any of that shit. So, yes, I mean,
and you know, I'll tell you one of the glaring ones for me, and you know,
might
I feel
be
this
changing,
way,
but
you know, I feel this way because it's something that we are, you know, that I'm proud of in our all of our time of exploring this shit. One of it is just like how to manage the day to day of of what it means to be an artist and trying to build a sustainable career to do that, because you really do have to look at, it's not just like, I really hope and I can put out some good social content. There are so many components to this that again, if you
branding,
like,
pitching,
and again, like literally how you manage time, how you manage the workflow, emotional and psychological sure. ups and downs. You know, it seems so basic, but a lot of entrepreneurs in other industries, the reason why they spend so much time talking about mindset is because you really yep. have to be prepared for a tornado of emotion. And ironically, punch myself in the face. Ironically, we don't talk about that.
Well, you just summed it up. You just summed up everything that, because here's the main question. Is that conservatory's responsibility? Because what I'm realizing out of this conversation is that I think what people propose, it's like, well, that's not what you're there to learn. You're there to learn literally how to act. You're not there to learn how to be an actor in the real world. You're there literally to learn craft and acting technique. That's right. What a conservatory is. So, but where I in agreement with you is like, that should not be 4 years. If that's all it is, which is not, look, I'm not saying, but the point you're making is spot on, is that's a lifelong process. That's, and the best way that you learn is by doing. And, you know, so what your process is and your craft is, like, that's not, if that's all you're getting at school, that is not 4 years of intense 12, 15 hours a day training. That to me does not make sense. What makes more sense to me, it's like, no, you're here to learn how to be an actor in the world. If that was the point of conservatory, then it opens up, and that was, you're not just here to learn how to act, but that's not what a conservatory is.
Here's why I think it has to be.
Sure. You're talking about redefining what a conservatory is.
I absolutely am, because I want to be clear. This point is really important. How many people do we know? And there might be people who are listening to this who have, not to be frou-frou, but given up on their dreams. And they might be incredibly talented, but they are ill-equipped. And it's not their fault. Because we are told, to your point, that we are being spoon-fed a culture, an idea that, yes, you're right. There is probably going to be at least one person whose experience is somewhat handed to them. And I appreciate that. But the fact of the matter is that there would be a lot more artists doing the thing that they should be doing, than there are today, if these training programs took responsibility for, at least per our primary point that I think that you agree with, managed expectations.
Well, that's it. Because, you know, look, what's the number one thing you always hear trained actors coming out of these schools say? Once I get the job, I'm fine.
Right.
That's what I always hear. Right. Put me in, coach. Once I'm in.
And I think that's a bullshit notion too.
I'll do it, but what I don't get is how to get the part, how to work, how to be working.
Right.
And so I think the main, you know, it all depends on what you're there. If you're there just to learn how to act, let me tell you, in my personal opinion, yes, it creates this beautiful, you know, I know people who work nonstop who have careers that are phenomenal, who look back at school as still the best time of their lives because of the environment, because of how incredibly fulfilling it was. But, you know, but what's hard is that, you know, is you just said, it's, that's not the job. Like, is it there to just teach you how to be a good, which is great. Are you there to learn how to act? Then I think 4 years, 15 hours a day might be a little overkill. I think, to be honest with you, because that's a, like you said, that's a lifelong process. And it perpetuates the myth of, well, if you're just a good actor, work comes. That's why we're going to focus on the acting, because if you're just a good act, if you're a phenomenal actor, then the work comes, which we all know is not true. But if you want to I think you're right. To rebuild the conservatory is preparing actors for the actor's life, hashtag actor's life. If that was the point of conservatory, to train them, then that would be a different proposition than what they currently are.
Well, it sort of brings me to this sort of like somewhat summation question here of this, and maybe to my, I'm happy to somewhat share my opinion subsequently, of like, you know, what was it worth it? Was acting conservatory worth it? / in comparison to something like a liberal arts program, and here I'll share my thought on this, which you might disagree with. With all this said, it's ironic because I actually, in some ways, think it's still the only option if you really want to build a sustainable career as an actor. There's lots of people who would disagree with me on that, but let me be clear what I mean. This business is too hard to not be the absolute best, as we always say, as a baseline. Excellence is a baseline. And there are so many, I just want to say, you know, I'm working on this project now, where some of the people involved are not actors. They're not actors. They're not trained. And we're working on one of the hardest plays that you ever, you know, could tackle.
Sure.
And they're ill-equipped. And so separate from all of the basics in a lot of ways, you know, the... And even what we were talking about with craft, if you want to build a sustainable career as an artist, no matter what the art is, but, you know, we're obviously talking about acting primarily, I do believe that taking that time, if for no other reason than to immerse yourself, as we said, in the day-to-day of creation, of being in that space of this is who I am and it's what I do, and finding the joy and the pain and the fear and all of that, and fully immersing yourself, even if you go down the road and you choose to pivot elsewhere, I think is a necessity. So for me, conservatory, you know, even with its highs and lows, you know, remains one of the most important things I've done. I had a great time at the School of the Arts. I'm very grateful. And I do think that artists choosing to pursue a career in this should go, period. What are your thoughts?
I have mixed thoughts. Well, one thing we didn't talk about, which I think is the best part, the biggest asset of school, is the community.
Mm-hmm.
That alone is worth the price of admission. And by the way, that, I think, is a School of the Arts thing, specifically.
I definitely agree. You're so right about that.
Because with School of the Arts, it's like a very, you know, we have probably, I think, the best alumni community. It's just like School of the Arts people show up for School of the Arts people.
So true. It's so true.
There's a share, just, there's something about it. Yeah. And it's not fostered by the school per se. It's just there's something, I don't know what it is. It's, and we have such a, and that's everything, is listen, the connections you have, and I'm not talking about the people who come to school, I'm talking about your fellow classmates. That to me is worth the price of admission. That's really, really special. Having that built-in community. Okay.
Yes.
But you know, you get that other places too. You know, NYU has a lot of that. Whatever. Okay. Where I have mixed feelings is I also think it depends what you want to do. Because look, I think that if you want to make a career on stage, intense training is important. Look, like, you know, there are some people who are TV people, because I don't know if conservatory is the only option for somebody who wants to do TV film, because we see it. There are plenty of people, sure, who are phenomenal TV film actors who did not go to conservatory, who were, you know, making pizzas and then took an acting class. And, you know, so I you know, for theater, I think it is a little different because you're going through such a grueling training process of 12, 15 hours a day, voice and speech, preparing your physical. Like, I'm like in the worst shape ever, but I can still get up on stage and I have stamina, yes, and I can be heard.
Yes.
And I can be, and that is, that I think comes with intensive training.
Sure.
I wouldn't take back my experience because I loved going to school. But what I think is more, what I think is most important, which is, you know, is that you understand that you need to find your own way. And that I did not, and I'm not saying that's the school's fault, but I need, we, every artist needs to find their way and understand what their process is and what their artistic vision and values are. Now, the only, and mission is. Now, the only way you can do that, of course, is by trying things out and like training yourself to understand those things.
Well, it's so funny. You say, you know, you always say that, and I appreciate it because it's not my experience. Meaning, because I think it's where it's a bit personal, and I've heard you say this before, that like there's maybe a smidgen of resentment in terms of feeling like you. And you are a very open person, and I don't mean this in a rude way, but impressionable, and really take things, you know, you, but it's part of your talent. Like, you're very open, and I think that I am a bit, you know, this about me, I'm
skeptical,
a bit more exactly.
Independent.
So I think that my experience there very much shaped. But I remember, years fighting on that whole act. So it was micro, but I remember being like, I'm in Matt Bullock's class, actions. No, you got a lambast her. What are you talking about? That's not, I was like, no. That's not, I'm not going to worry about that. It wasn't until Laura Henry that I really understood how to play an action. Because you don't play an action. Let me be clear. My opinion. You don't write down a bunch of words, verbs, and get up and go, ooh, I got to make sure that I shock her with this line. No, it's and Laura's whole perspective, you know, it's character work. You understand the kinds of actions that your character plays, you physicalize them, and then you forget it. I love that. But I'm saying it because I'm pushing back for years on this in school, being like, this is insane to me. Anyway.
But this is, I think, a general thing with training in general, right, is that what's very dangerous and dead to me, and this is, you know, is when anybody says, I'm not saying you're saying this, but, you know, I'm about to teach a Shakespeare. I'm about to do a Shakespeare intensive that I'm teaching. It's like, what's very dangerous to me is dogma. Dogma in training is dangerous, in my opinion, where, you know, anything is anything. And that's the way it is.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, is conservatory worth it? I think if you get into I think it depends on what conservatory you're going to. If you get into a really good conservatory, yes, I think it's worth it because, listen, you need to train, you need to get your teeth, you know, and per your point, if you don't have a backup plan, like if you're like, I'm doing this and I don't want a minor in, you know, coding or whatever, and it's like, this is what the fuck I'm doing, and you're really going all in, then you might as well get that intense training, like, at the beginning, and then understand that, you know, it is the beginning. Even after that 4 years of investment, it is the beginning. Understand that. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, you need to figure out what your values are, separate from what your teachers tell you, what your artistic values are. And, you know,
and more importantly, let me say, it's not one and done, meaning right. because I think this again goes back to the idea that, like, I'm supposed to leave school and be ready for the rest of my life. Well, no, you've got the rest of your life. There's more shit to learn, more experiences to be had, more things to, you know, challenge yourself. I would argue, you know, go study new, even if you have that opinion or point of view and go, I feel confident in this. Great. Why don't you try something
go fuck it up. Yeah.
Only cause I have to go. Let's right. jump to comfort food performances. Right. Comfort food performances.
Yeah.
And you're going to like mine. And I'm sure you haven't, or maybe you have seen it, because I watched it last night. And it's a new movie called Dream Scenario, starring Nicolas Cage.
Yeah,
and he's great. He's great in it. He's so good. I mean, we always know Nicolas Cage is great, but
I agree with you. I think Nicolas Cage is great.
He is really good, and I think you'll like this movie. It's actually a part that you could play. Interesting. It's a really interesting Nick, I think you'll like the movie. I think you'll like what he does. And but Nick Cage is great in it. And he, just quick premise, not giving too much away.
Oh, yeah.
He plays someone who starts appearing in people's dreams around the world, like all kinds of people. And so he becomes like randomly famous for it. And then those dreams turn into nightmares. And it's like how the world starts to react to him. And so he has, and the movie sort of shows him on that journey, but then also he has to recreate many of the dreams and the nightmares that people are having. And he's just great. He's just such a dynamic, unique, weird, subtle performer. And it's a good movie and a great performance.
Yep. I love Nick Cage. Yeah, I think that's really good. I guess if I had to choose one right now off the top of my head, you know, it's hard. I would honestly say, for some reason, The Green Mile's coming up. Michael Jeter in The Green Mile. Have you ever seen The Green Mile?
I have.
Oh,
yes.
It's so
yes.
good.
And I'm remembering his performance.
Michael Jeter
yes.
has a bit part. He has that yes, bit part he's where he's good. Like the guy with the mouse, Mr. Bojangles.
Yes, he's very good.
He's excellent in that. I love Michael Jeter.
Me so too.
Michael Jeter is like, there's like a couple of actors like those are always the actors I relate to the most. Like those bit, like
totally.
Michael Jeter, like John Cazale, like people like that.
Totally.
Who are like sort of those like bit part kind of people who like, and he is so good in that. Well, that movie is just incredible.
Yes.
But he is so good in that movie. He's just like, he is that guy. It's like, you know, and he was such an interesting looking dude.
Yep.
And he was funny, so funny, but so soft and caring. And that's a great performance, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Well, folks, thank you so much for tuning in for our 6.5-hour episode of Creative Risk, where we talk about art, entrepreneurialism, and everything in between. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like and subscribe, of course. And if you really like the podcast, as I think you've heard us mention, we do have a Patreon now, patreon.com/creativeriskpodcast, where you can get bonus episodes, full episodes, and some bonus weekly shorter episodes from Labad and myself, plus some discounts on merch and or discounts in working with either of us one-on-one. Yep. Which, who wouldn't want that magic?
Who wouldn't want that?
So check it out, and we'll see you soon.